Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus, as I literally am taking out the Big Red Bus for a ride on the streets of Chicago, heading on to 290 toward Chicago. And I look, and lo and behold, right next to me is my co-pilot, the great one, the podfather, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
Well, I'd be doing a little better if DeMar DeRozan didn't just fumble that last pass and went and knocked down a three at the buzzer like he would have last year. But, you know, it's not last year.
Yeah, it's hard to criticize DeMar for anything, though, yesterday. Because without his performance, I think we'd probably lose by at least 15 to 20. Overall, he's been absolutely fantastic. But I have noticed that the Bulls' clutch time stats and wins in five games decided by 5 points or less, considerably less impressive this year than last.
Yeah, I wonder who would have said that we shouldn't count on DeMar DeRozan to win six games at the buzzer again. And that would have an impact on the total wins. Because that kind of stuff just regresses to the mean. And it was just crazy that it was so high last year.
I think I had that prophecy. I think I prophesized that, Doug. I got to check with the University of Northeast Idaho.
Are you full of it right now?
I know you did too, but I think I agreed with you.
Yeah, kind of.
What are you talking about?
You argued with me. You argued with me about it first. I said DeMar DeRozan isn't going to win so many games, and you came back with, oh, DeMar DeRozan is still going to be just as good as last year. And I said, yes, he'll be just as good as last year.
Well, I think that's true.
But he's not going to win you six games again in the clutch, because that was double the second best player in the NBA, and that was just a crazy, unsustainable thing to ever have happen again.
I doth protest.
I'm just saying, don't make it sound like it's your prophecy.
He's going to continue to win games. All I'm saying is, I didn't think we'd see a major drop-off from DeMar, and according to my friends and the scientists at Northeast Idaho, that's another correct prophecy.
Yeah, yeah.
But on to the topic at hand.
I had to talk you into this one.
I don't want to hear your guff. The loss against the Pelicans, gosh, it's just so frustrating to lose so many games like this within a few points. I look at this game. I look at the game we lost to the Wizards. There's so many of these games already early on in the season. Not so many, but 3 to 4, where I felt like these were extremely winnable. And if we just had a little better play from the players outside the big three, I think the results may have been different. Do you concur?
Yeah, but here's what I'm going to counter with this. Last year, we were getting blown out by 20 every game. Like, what would you rather have? Like, all right, so, you know, now we got blown out by the Cavs in that game. It was like, 20-something points. We lost to the Wizards by 2. We lost to the Spurs by 5. We lost to the 76ers by 5. We lost to the Celtics by 4. Lost to the Raptors by 9. So that was, you know, maybe a bigger one. We lost this one by 4. I'd rather be losing by 4 every game than losing by 20 every game. You know, like, okay, fine, we're not winning all the close games. You wish we were a little better in the clutch. You wish we could get more out of some of these other guys. I agree with every single thing that you said there. But, like, most of these teams are good teams. And now we're, like, we're in the game at the end of the game, right? Like, this is kind of like the non-Lonzo roster we had at the end of last season. And at the end of last season, we weren't in any of these games. We were just down by 20 every game. And so I view that as progress, even though it's frustrating, because now you feel like, well, why can't we cross the finish line on some of these and get some more wins? Like, I get that too, you know, because our wins have generally been all, like, pretty big. You know, like, we beat the Heat by 8, we beat the Celtics by 18, we beat the Pacers by 15, we beat the Nets by 9, beat the Hornets by 18, and we beat the Raptors by 14. So, like, our wins have been, like, pretty comfortable, like, generally speaking, right? Like, I think the lowest of those I mentioned was 8 points. So our wins have been a lot more comfortable. Our losses have been closer. But, you know, that's a sign of a team that's actually maybe a little bit better than their record. I think that's good. Like, I think that those are all good signs. They're frustrating, but they're good signs. Like, you'd rather have that than, like, we barely scrape by in all our wins and we're getting killed in all our losses. You know, that's a sign of a team that's maybe it's underperforming a little bit, and that's a little frustrating. But that's a positive sign that the team has actually got some room to get better as the season goes on.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I agree. Like, if you look, and you're referring to, of course, the end of last year.
Yeah, yeah, end of last year.
February on, where the Bulls, transformed. There was a 5-game stretch last year, I think in late February, where DeRozan went, you know, super nuclear and just won, you know, game after game for us against not very good teams with just incredible performances of 40 plus almost on every night. And then after that point, shortly thereafter, we kind of just fell off a cliff and started losing badly. This team has started differently, obviously not as good as last year's team. A lot of that, to me, has to do with the fact that the East is significantly better. But we both predicted right around, I think I said 44, you had 39. I think we're going to finish in that range, but I think there's a good possibility that this team will be much better at the end of the year, provided we get a little bit of luck in the health department, Zach gets stronger, and hopefully Lonzo comes back. Because there's no doubt Goran Dragic has been a huge surprise for me in how well he's played overall. He's had a couple stinkers here and there. And obviously Andre Drummond, who's, I think his loss has been a little bit understated, you know, recently. And having him hopefully healthy at the end of the year will make the team considerably better.
Yeah, I agree. The signings of Drummond and Dragic, I liked Drummond a lot. I thought that was a great signing. I think we were both pretty skeptical of Goran Dragic. You know, he was really bad last year. Shot really poorly. I don't know that it's sustainable what he's doing right now, but he's been fantastic. Like, he's really been fantastic. He has given you everything you kind of hoped Kobe White would have been able to give you, but can't. So he's been really good. He's shooting the ball amazing from the three-point line, but he's actually also then giving you great point guard play, which you never really got out of Kobe White. It's just been a fantastic signing. So we'll see how that trends over the rest of the year, but boy, has he been really good so far.
Yeah, I'm a little hesitant, too, to argue. You know, like, a lot of fans are bringing up the fact that some key players have been out of rotation with Kobe White, Andre Drummond, obviously Zach missing every other game. But we never really talk about the teams that we play that are missing key players. Like, Toronto was missing Siakam. Obviously, he's arguably their best player. We don't really talk about that. Like, to me, it kind of almost evens out unless it's just an unusual barrage of injuries. To key players, as long as DeMar DeRozan's on the floor and Vooch is on the floor and they've been remarkably durable, the Bulls should win games. Like, we should expect to be at least a 500 team, in my opinion. So let's not, you know, start crying and acting like we're really, the injuries are just devastating this team. They're devastating a lot of teams, and we rarely factor that into these teams that we play.
I think it's a little worse for the Bulls than other teams. I mean, so Lonzo is your third best player. Like, I would say your best player is probably DeMar, then Zach, then Lonzo, then Vooch. And so, you know, and Vooch, even, I mean, and that's even just this year. Like, last year, Vooch, I wouldn't even say was fourth. Like, he was really bad. So, but this year, he's played well. Like, I'm happy with Vooch. I don't want to start trashing Vooch. Because he's been good. He's been good this year. His shooting has been a lot better, and that's been great. But, so you're missing your third best player for every game, and then, like, half your games, you're missing your second best player. So, you know, I think that's been rough. And then you're missing, you know, Drummond, who's clearly a rotation player. And then Kobe White, he may have played his way out of the rotation, to be honest. But a guy you expected to be a rotation player at the start of the season. So, you know, for a lot of these games, you're missing four rotation players and two in your top three. That's a lot. That's not what every team is dealing with. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's an excuse or not, though. Like, it just is what it is. You know, like, when you signed Lonzo, you knew he was injury prone. You knew Zach, you know, tended to wear down and isn't a guy who plays 80 games. So that is, like, the reality of what the Bulls are going to have to deal with. So whether you want to cry about it or not, like, it is what is likely to happen in the future, too. Like, I don't think we're ever going to look at the start of next year, I don't think we're going to go into next year and say, Lonzo's going to give us 82 games and Zach's going to give us 82 games, right? Like, you're going to pencil both those guys in for 50 to 60 games at the start of the season, even if they're healthy in training camp. Like, that's just what your mental spot's got to be. So this is the team we put together. The team is going to have to deal with injuries because of the guys we signed.
Well, that's my point. And you did a better job of sharpening the point.
Yeah, I agree. I guess I was saying, I talked myself into it. I talked myself into agreeing with you. The more I talk, the more I'm like, Fred's kind of right. But I should say,
you acquired Ball for $20 million. Why are you surprised he's out? He's been out almost every year of his career.
I should say it's worse than other teams, though. What we're going through is worse than a lot of other teams, but it's also by design. Maybe I would just add that.
Is Pascal Siakam the best player on the Toronto Raptors?
Probably, yes.
He made All-NBA last year. He's out for three straight weeks. Like, if you ask me, what would you rather have? What we're going through or missing DeMar DeRozan for 3 weeks? I'd say what we have now. DeMar DeRozan, we cannot lose. Like, you lose him, this team will, I really believe, take a significant.
I don't know. I think if you had healthy Lonzo and you had healthy Zach and you lost DeMar, I think you'd be better off.
Better off? Yeah. You actually think this team would be better? He's our best passer right now, DeMar. He leads the team in assists. Our best scorer. He's the only player who gets to the line on a consistent basis, in and out every night. And he gets points at the free throw line. Underrated stat that puts the defense in trouble. The guy is the best player on the team. I don't even think it's close.
Sure, I agree. He's the best player on the team. I said that earlier. I just said that if I had to choose Zach and Lonzo Ball versus DeMar, I would take Zach and Lonzo Ball. Those two guys, to me, have a better impact cumulatively than DeMar does. And granted, Zach's not out like every game. I think in like some ways, Ball gives the Bulls actually the biggest impact in wins and losses of any player on this team. Because his defense allows them to do so many things they just can't do without him. The fast break allows him. He can't create a shot like DeMar can to win a game in a close game. But I think Lonzo actually impacts the wins and losses of this team maybe more than any other player. Even though he's not the most talented, I think like his skill set and what he brings is so unique that it actually impacts the game maybe the most of any player.
I think we're biased because Lonzo, no doubt, helps where the Bulls are deficient in terms of defense and three-point shooting. So he does impact that part of our games, but to me it's clear, if you had to take a guess on what matters most in terms of winning and losing, it's DeMar DeRozan, and it's not even close. Like, he's the guy that helps us win games. It's a good argument, though, to make. It's an interesting argument, and I do agree with you. He's probably second on the team.
I don't know. The thing is, though, with DeMar, like, the other thing that's kind of a negative is he gets into this very iso ball style of play. Like, with Lonzo in there, the ball is just moving a lot more. You're getting a lot more easy baskets. Like, if you need one shot at the end of the game, DeMar clearly is way more important than Ball. If you're in a close game with like 3 minutes left, I think DeMar DeRozan is far more important. But your odds of being in a close game are way less if Lonzo is playing and healthy. But either way, I totally get what you're saying. It's not crazy. It's really hard to gauge those two different things. They're nearly polar opposites in what they bring to the Bulls in terms of strengths.
Let's talk about, in the last show, you were very concerned about Zach LaVine. I think the next game he had probably his best game of the year. I think it was against Charlotte. I can't recall what game it was where he had 30 plus and was the best player on the floor. Wasn't it Charlotte? I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, I think so. Right, I mean, he definitely, since then, Zach LaVine just torched everyone. He's been great.
So, are you feeling better? Let's revisit that argument. Are you feeling better about where Zach LaVine is in terms of, you know, this team and his health and moving?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I'm still nervous about Zach, but he's looked way better. Like, he just looked more explosive, you know, since that last show.
And I'm sensing, I don't know if you are from the quotes, like, I'm sensing it's now at the point where it's more so the organization's a little bit more being protective of him than Zach is. Like, that's what I'm taking from a lot of the quotes I'm reading and his general demeanor and post-game interviews. Like, I think it seems like he's probably trying to push them more. Hey, let me go. Let me play a little bit longer. And the organization's taking a little bit more cautious approach, which I happen to agree with. Like, I do feel like the Bulls in the long run, I'd sit Zach out as much as possible in his first 3-4 months, let him come back easily, and then play him more in the games that really matter, which is in, you know, April and May.
I don't know. I disagree with the idea that the org is protecting him, only because when he missed the first game, he came out and said, like, oh, I'm 100%. Everything's fine. Everything is great. And the org is like, yeah, he's having some soreness or whatever. Like, so Zach, I think, is just, like, says whatever he wants to say to make himself look better. Like, I just don't think you can believe what Zach LaVine says. Like, I think he's just like, yeah, there's nothing wrong. Why are you sitting out? Well, you know, I don't know. Like, it just yeah. His words just don't make any sense. So, I'm not trying to, like, trash Zach for that or whatever, but I just don't think you can take Zach saying he feels 100% as meaning anything after he said that, and then, like, 2 days later, he had to miss the first two games of the season. Like,
fair point.
Like, whatever. Like, he's shown he's not reliable. It'd be like listening to LaVar Ball give you an injury update on Lonzo Ball and thinking it means something. Like, it just doesn't.
I want to put our educator hats on, and, you know, we're past the 10% of the season is completed. So, in essence, let's treat this first 10% of games as a test, and let's rate and grade how our team has done. So let's start out with each player. I'd love you give me a grade for Io DeSumo.
I'd probably give Io a C minus. I was just trying to see what you would react with.
I almost drove off the road. I was just waiting to see. He's clearly a B.
I think Io is a B and maybe even an A if you want to think of what reasonable expectations were. I mean, I know you're such a huge Io fan that your expectations aren't reasonable. Like, you expected him to be, like, so fantastic. But, yeah, I mean, I think he's a B-plus. Like, you know, for a second-rounder going into his second season, you know, his progression has been really good. You got to be happy with how he's shooting the three overall. Everything about Io has been very positive.
No doubt.
He's putting in points. He's improving all over the board. So I'm really happy with what Io's been able to give the team.
He's really helped to lessen the loss of Lonzo Ball. Let's just put it that way. In a million years, to get that out of a second-round pick, to see the progression he's had and taking this opportunity by the throat and really established himself already in his second year in the NBA as clearly, at a minimum, a solid rotation NBA player.
Yeah, I'd say even starter.
Something we should all celebrate. Starter quality.
He's a 4-5 starter now, like a fourth or fifth starter. You know, like for a team that's got like two or three stars or two stars and like a really good player, you know, and the fourth and fifth starters are kind of just like solid, do everything kind of guys. Like Io is that kind of guy. He brings a little bit of everything to the table. Solid passer. He can create a shot in if you need him to. He's a good 3-point shooter now, so he's very solid in the catch and shoot. You know, to play around star players. He's a versatile defender. You know, he just kind of brings a little bit of everything to the table. He's probably not amazing at any one thing, but he's solid at everything. And so he's a guy who can fit in with anyone on the floor. And he can kind of cover up and give you a little bit of whatever you need, whatever that is. And so you got to like that. You know, like that's a really strong, solid player. You know, every team wishes they had two or three guys like that, and most teams have one. So.
Yeah, and only the dum-dums and Mini Cooperites can't see the jump that he's made this year. Like,
who's arguing? Are you like, I've not seen anyone.
There's no one out there. I still get it when he has a when he has a poor plus minus. I'll get a couple people sending me like notes.
They send you those notes because you idiotically talk about plus minus. That's why they send them to you. I'm the one who sends you those notes, and I only send them to you because you talk about plus minus all the time. And I'm like, stop talking about it. It's an irrelevant stat on a game by game basis. It's an irrelevant stat over 10 games.
I agree.
But you talk about it, so stop talking about it.
It is relevant.
Just make a promise right now that you'll never bring up plus minus again.
I'll never make that promise because it's a valid
stat. It is not a valid stat on a game-by-game basis. And if it is a valid stat, then Io DeSumo sucks, and he's an F-minus because he has the worst plus-minus on the team of any rotation player today.
Right now?
Right now. He's worse than Patrick Williams.
What is he?
Negative 19.8 is his on-off. Patrick Williams is negative 17.1. Vooch is negative 17.6. Okay.
Vooch is that far in the negative? I'm shocked to hear that.
Well, I mean, generally.
Who's the number one? Who's the best player on the team?
And plus minus?
It's got to be DeMar.
DeMar is negative 12.2. The best guy is Andre Drummond, plus 20.9. Second best guy is Goran Dragic, plus 18.2. Third is Alex Caruso, plus 16.5.
Makes sense. Yep, exactly. So that makes sense.
Yeah, but I mean, it's because
you
there's
got to factor in they're playing bench players and
yeah, the bench has killed people in a few games. We've had a few massive, massive runs. There's not enough minutes for any of this to mean anything. You need over 1,000 minutes before it means anything at all, and we're just nowhere near that. And you really need something like it's irrelevant. Plus minus is such a shit stat. It's just a junk stat. And it tells you nothing about an individual. Okay. It tells you about how a group is playing and how you're playing as part of that group. It's a junk stat. So stop bringing it up.
All right. The other thing I wanted to talk about was what am I talking about? We just finished with
Io DeSumo with Io. Grades for players
is a B. I would actually give him a B+, but I just don't want to be accused of bias, so I'll give him a B.
Okay, fair enough.
Let's go to Patrick Williams.
I think he's trending upwards, you know, like I would say after like six games, like we were ready to be like, F this guy, get him off the team. And There was a bunch of stories about how his brother told him this and someone told him that, and all of a sudden he started playing aggressively. Also happened at the same time he got benched for a game. Maybe the idea that, like, he got benched, someone said, like, hey, why don't you watch Javonte Green and do what he does, you dumbass? And since then, he's been playing better and he's been more aggressively. But I'm still going to go with D+. Like, it's trending up toward I'm at least not, like, kick this guy off the team. But, you know, the overall is still, you can't be like an F- for like 6 games and then, you know, be like a C+ for 6 games and then have me think, like, now you're great. So I'd say a D+.
I'd give him a little bit more generous. I'll give him a D because he has absolutely played better recently.
I gave him a D+. Like, how is a D more generous?
It's, oh, I'm sorry, I think it's a D-. All right, let me give him a C-. No, I'll give him a D+. I can't give him a C. It hasn't been that good. But he has clearly played better recently. He's just been more aggressive. Like, I just want him to play harder. It's not that difficult. Like, and it's clear to me that somebody on the team has said to him or shown him tape, Patrick, why are you not attacking the offensive boards here? And Billy's talked about it. Everybody talks about aggressiveness in the shooting air. I don't care about that. You don't need him to shoot well. I care about it a little bit, nowhere near as much as everybody else does. I want to see him be more aggressive in terms of just hustling and attacking the boards. His rebounding has been pathetic, absolutely pathetic. And, you know, he has improved. It's still not, like, to me, average. Like, I don't think he's been consistently over a game. I don't think he's had one game where I've said that was a phenomenal game. You know, can you say that? No. No, nobody can say that. But he has played better.
Well, I mean, so that's all we're saying. Against Charlotte, he was 7 of 9 for 16 points. Oh, that was pretty good.
I missed that game. Well, that's pretty good. All right, I'll take that back.
But yeah, he's not been amazing. And even 7 of 9 for 16 points. Like, 16 is his season high. Like, you don't say, like, for a guy people talk about being a star, a season high of 16 points is not like, unbelievable or anything. So, yeah.
I just want to be a rotation player. The star thing I don't see.
No, no. I mean,
do you right now, if you had to bet money, is this guy ever going to make an All-Star?
I would have bet against that. At any point in his career, including the day we drafted him. So I don't, like, there's no point I ever thought this guy's
probably the wrong guy to talk to.
The future All-Star about. But yeah, I think at this point, I would, so him shooting well is important. Him doing anything well is important. And so because he's not playing offense well, and I don't know why people think, like, now I see stuff like, oh, he's aggressive. He just needs to develop a step. Like, they name, like, 10 advanced offensive moves. I'm like, anyone would love to develop those moves. Like, that's not easy to do. So he doesn't have, like, the raw skill set to be great offensively. He's not a super elite athlete. He's an above average athlete, but not, like, way above average. So we'll see what happens with him. You know, the aggressiveness is just the first thing you want to see, because if you're aggressive, you can stay on the floor. Right, like, if you can rebound and you can play some defense, then you can stay on the floor and you can allow that offense to come to you. But if you don't have great offense right away and you can't do those other things, there's no reason for you to be out there. And now you don't have a chance to develop those offensive opportunities or skills because your defense isn't good enough to keep you on the floor and your offense isn't good enough to keep you on the floor. So now that he's at least hustling, he's good enough that you can keep him on the floor a little bit and give him a chance to continue to develop.
Hold on 1 second, Doug. I got to order my coffee. Yeah, I'll take a medium iced coffee with cream and sugar-free vanilla. No sugar, sugar-free. Yeah, that's it. All right, man. Have a good day. All right. Sorry about that, DT.
Yeah, that's great. Now that we have this interlude, I just want to bring up that when we're talking about Patrick Williams.
Oh, I got a point to make about Patrick Williams.
I'll let you get to your point after I mock you. You love to bring up plus minus stats, but you said that a plus is less than a neutral. You know, a D+ is less than your grade of D. So I just want to question all your uses of plus minus from now on. Do you understand that the plus is the positive part?
I do know that. I didn't hear, for some reason, I missed the part where you said plus. Uh-huh. In my head, I thought you meant D minus.
Yeah, yeah. All I'm saying is maybe there's something really confusing overall for you with the plus and the minus.
All right. Regardless, I want to ask you something for the fans. A lot of people who listen to this don't remember Tyrus Thomas.
Yeah.
I do very well. Sure. And so, like, I'd like your opinion on this because you know, I still, when I hear these, see these games where he plays well and everybody's so excited, oh, Patrick Williams, he's the real deal. You know, like, oh, this was a great pick, et cetera, et cetera. I always go back in my head to Tyrus Thomas. Tyrus Thomas had so many moments as a rookie and a second-year player, even in 2009 playoffs, where we were all like, man, this guy's going to be freaking awesome. He was one of the few players I ever went to at the United Center where people would absolutely be in shock and awe about an athletic play that he made, several blocked shots that were, the whole crowd was going nuts. Do you agree with me, or do you disagree with me, that Tyrus Thomas had a better first 3 years in the NBA than Patrick Williams?
I mean, Patrick Williams is not through his third year, you're aware, right?
Well, that's right. Well, that's the first two, then.
Well, and he missed almost his entire second year. So there's...
All right, let's go first year one.
A whole lot to gauge there. I don't know. I mean, Tyrus Thomas, I just went to look this up, so I'm cheating, just so no one thinks I have Tyrus' stat line memorized. I mean, he averaged 5.2 points a game his first year. Like, I don't know that I would look at Tyrus
Thomas.
Well,
isn't that what Patrick averaged?
I don't.
He played a lot more.
I think
he played.
Yeah, Patrick Williams played a lot more.
Twice as much.
I would say I don't know that one impressed me. I don't know that Tyrus had a better year. Let me put it this way, or a better 3 years, but he definitely had more signs of like, holy shit, if this guy puts it together, he could be really incredible. Like Tyrus, when he you saw things he did. And you're like, oh my God, this is nuts. Like, if this guy just puts it together, this could be really good. And I wouldn't say you've seen that from Patrick Williams at all. So I would say Tyrus is more tantalizing over his first couple seasons than Patrick Williams has been.
That's the only point of my comment is, like, when we're talking signs, there's a lot of players that show signs. What makes the difference between a player who's got a future as an all-star is when they start developing, putting games together, consistency, putting multiple games where they're doing something that people that have an impact on winning and losing. And we just haven't seen that anywhere near enough from Patrick. I'm not saying he's going to be bad. I don't feel like he's going to ever be remotely an all-star. I think he has the capability of being a good rotation player and potentially a starter.
Yeah.
My biggest issue with him, though, is I have to say this is where he's at in his development is completely incongruent where this team is. We have a team built with DeMar DeRozan and Vucevic who are on the tail end of their primes. So you can't be waiting for a guy like him to develop. If this was year one of a rebuild, totally fine with it. Year two, this is a team that's like near the end of their window.
Well, then your question is...
Whatever that is.
Your question is, are you trying to maximize this window, or are you just trying to get started for the next window? Like, I mean, I just don't think this team's going to go anywhere with this group. Like, in the next 2 years. Like,
not with Patrick Williams at the starting four.
But, like, if you're trading him for Jay Crowder, which we talked about last show when he was absolutely sucking, and I probably wouldn't do that trade now they've shown me some sign of life. Like, Jay Crowder is not enough to push this team anywhere. So,
in the second round,
I think that's very dicey.
It absolutely is.
I think that's very dicey. It's enough to give you like a 20% chance at the second round, maybe. Maybe. I mean, we'll see where things go. It really depends a lot what happens with Lonzo and Zach over the season health wise. Like, there's so much variability to this team based on whether Lonzo comes back healthy at some point. Like, if you could just tread water, say you're like 500 in February, and Lonzo Ball comes back February 28th, last day of February, March 1st, but he comes back and he's been working out like in 5-on-5 for 5 weeks, and he comes back and he's like ready to roll, right? He's ready to roll March 1st. He's like full-on Lonzo Ball, best Lonzo Ball on March 1st, which is a long time from now. And Zach LaVine has been load managed well, and Zach LaVine is healthy. And then that team gets like 5-6 weeks to play with each other and it hits the playoffs. Like, this team could be really good. Like, you're just trending at 500 and then you add Lonzo. But like, man, it's so much chance that's just not going to happen. Like, and so then if it doesn't happen, yeah, like 1-3.
That's exactly. That's, Doug, to me, those are good odds.
1-3 is good odds.
to me, if it's 33% chance you're going to have that scenario, you have to go out and upgrade the power forward position to optimize the chances for this team. Because so, what you just described,
let's say you
there's
do
a
that.
1 in 3 chance of happening.
Let's say you do that. And let's say you get Jay Crowder, since that was the guy I threw out. And now you have Jay Crowder, and let's say you get to the second round of the playoffs. And I think that's like a really low percentage chance of happening. But let's just say it happens. And then you get smoked in the second round. Then so what? Then you go into next season, and then what? Now you have a team full of old guys that are going to be worse than last year. Like, even then, it's like, you got to feel like if you get to the second round, you have a chance to get past it too, I think. I think you just need to get someone a little better. Like, I don't know. I agree with what you're saying about the timeline. I just don't know that this group is good enough, and there's too many questions around them. I just don't know if there's enough positive feeling to feel like, yeah, we should go all in. But the nice thing is, even though we're having this debate here now on November 10th, we don't really have to decide this until the trade deadline. Like, there's no trade out there to trade Patrick Williams now. No one's making trades in November. Like, they just aren't. Trades don't happen in November, generally speaking. All this stuff is going to go down in February. Well, in mid-February, you're going to have a really good idea, like, what Lonzo's status is, you know? You're going to have a really good idea, like, has Patrick gotten better, worse? What's going on here? Is this someone we want to hang on to? So, like, I agree there's a possibility that you're going to want to do that trade in February, but I think you're just going to know in February. Like, are we really – what's happening with all these other teams? Like, did Miami just fall off a cliff, or are they now really competitive? Same with Philadelphia, same with some of these other teams. Like, in February, you're going to know, like, do I really feel like I have a shot at this thing or not? You know, maybe in February, Giannis tore his ACL, and you're like, yeah, this East is wide open now. Like, so you'll have a much better idea of what's going on then. And so I agree, like, there's a possibility we're going to want to do exactly what you say. But I wouldn't pull the trigger on that right now. That's all I'm saying.
And I do want to say, though, I get the feeling, like, that scenario you described that we both agreed, 33% chance of happening, that Lonzo comes back in March and is kicking ass and Zach is healthy. That team, I do think there's the delta between them and the best, even the best in the East, is much smaller than you would suspect.
Yeah.
Because if you bring in like a guy like Crowder, I guess a lot depends on what you feel about Jay Crowder. I happen to think Jay Crowder brings a lot of what the Bulls need. Toughness, three-point shooting from the four position, versatility as a defender. You can even sometimes put him as a small ball five. I love everything that he brings. Now, he is getting a little bit on the tail end of his prime, but there's a reason why everywhere he goes, the team usually gets better. He brings a lot of what you need to win. And I do feel like he's another guy you can throw on Giannis. He's another guy you can throw on some of the better players occasionally, defensively, that will significantly help us win games and make the miracle.
What makes me feel really sad is that last year we could have traded Kobe White and Patrick Williams for Jerami Grant. And, you know, like I had said I would have done that last year, and here we are. Like, so you're talking about Jay Crowder now. Imagine if we had Jerami Grant instead. Like, Jerami Grant could give you real offense, a solid defender. You know, he can fit into the team concept.
We're already at 30-plus minutes. I got to bring the bus in. Any last thoughts as we depart on where you feel the team is at?
I'm actually really positive about where the team is at. I know I've been negative sort of relative to the norm going into the season, and they're 6-7, and you might say, like, wow, that's really bad, but I like how they're winning their wins more than they're losing their losses. And, you know, you still have the hope of Lonzo coming back, and if he does come back, this team's gonna be much better than it is now. So I think there's actually upside. I'm pretty pleased that we're not getting blown out. This team looks a lot better than I expected them to. So
all right, man, take it easy. Go Bulls. Bye bye, buddy.
Go Bulls. See you, Fred.